Yes, there was two hands I saw.
Well, I was just going to, you know. It seems to me the danger here, too, is that medicine will become so... Some doctors can become so intoxicated with the sheer power of their ability to change
and worry.
Correct and so on, that perhaps we'll lose sight of the good of the person that we're dealing with in the interest of the technique. And this can be...
Well, it's an awfully ill wind that blows nobody any good. I went to what I suppose would be regarded, it was paid for by a friend of mine, a high-powered doctor in San Francisco who informed me that I was going to be dead in 3 months. And he was much more interested, I got the feeling, in taking the body to pieces afterwards to find out what had killed it than in getting it better. That, at any rate, was what was coming over. And what he was charging, I didn't think that was quite his job. After all, I had not gone to a pathologist in the morgue. I thought I'd gone to get to see what was wrong. I could be wrong on that, but that was the impression I got. At all events, he made me mad for a bit, and then he did something else. Then something else happened. He didn't do it, I only saw him the once. I said, okay, if I'm going to die, I'm going to do the finest job of it I possibly can. And that brings us to the most important point of all. If you're told that, then just accept it. I was mad at him, not because he told me I was going to kick the bucket, but for the way in which he did it. And it was so beautifully clinical, and when it's over, I'll sort of take the body to pieces and find out why. I mean, this is my personal property. I have objections to somebody telling me they're going to take it to pieces to find out why. I'll find out why if anybody finds out why. It's no third party's business to my mind. At all events, that was what got me mad. And then I started working out and thinking, right, if I'm going to die, then the finest thing I'm going to do is do the finest job possible. And simply by accepting it and starting to meditate on it and work on it. I don't know if you've read my book, Lotus Blossom, How to Grow a Lotus Blossom, which is how a Zen Buddhist prepares for death. I not only got better, I'm better now than I've ever been. But I had to accept the fact first. And that's also what you have to do with these illnesses. You have to accept that you've got a pain in the stomach. You have to accept that you've got the ulcer. You have to accept that you've got the high blood pressure. You can't sit there and say it isn't happening. And so many people won't believe it's happening. Oh no, I can't possibly be ill. I can't possibly go and see a doctor. Above all, do they say this when they're mentally ill? I can't go and see a shrink. There's nothing wrong with me. If you accept it, then you can get better from it. Go ahead, friend. You were...
I was just going to say something in defense of doctors.
I thought I just said some things in defense of doctors, but never mind.
Well, all I was going to say is that, you know, people forget that there are physicians around who try and keep up with the times and try and keep up with the Eastern, Western,
yes, I agree
all
with
types
you.
Of philosophies
I have one.
And religions.
Yeah.
And, you know, they are people who do, and there are physicians who do this, so that they're not all mad scientists who want to...
I agree with you. I have got one down. I've got one down in Walnut Creek who tries absolutely everything. One day he's going to be one of the finest doctors under the sun. If he doesn't stick his head into a hornet's nest before he's 40 by accident. But I find him a very wonderful young man. A lot of people get worried by some of the things he tries. But at least he's trying.
He's broad-minded.
He's what?
He's very broad-minded.
Yeah, at least he's trying. He's having a look. It is said in Buddhism that the one thing that... must absolutely be avoided is the inability to move. Even if it's only a millionth of an inch, you must still move. You must still be able to move. You must never be hemmed in that you can't move in any direction.
Maybe they should stress also the karmic responsibility, karmic encourages that you bring to yourself by a lack of action as well.
Oh, yes. That's enough. Oh, brother, is that pointed out, too. I actually cannot train people here unless they're willing to make mistakes.
A lot of people don't realize that the act of not moving is still an act. Mm-hmm. You know, that is still a form of action. Mm-hmm. And the old saying that, you know, why did this happen? Or, I mean, I didn't even do anything. Something like that. Often comes just from that result. And there's that saying that what evil flourishes as long as good men sit back and do nothing.
Yes. All it takes for evil to flourish is for good men to do nothing. Yes. How many times have I said that to various people? I lost count of them.
All of which makes all of this business like walking on a tightrope. Yeah. It's very easy to fall off both sides. And in fact, the way we tend to judge whether or not someone is doing their training well here is if they do fall off, both sides, not just one, you know. And gradually, hopefully, you sort of catch yourself before you fall on quite so far and scramble back up on again. If you're always falling off one side, it's pretty clear what you need to do. But if you're falling off both sides, you're probably doing all right. Awful way of looking at it, but what else can you do?
Yes, it hurts a little, but at least you're doing something. When I first went to the East, I was asked, could I play chess? And I said, yes. Fine. How many sound moves can you make? I said, two. And it was the Archbishop I was talking to. He looked at me and said, that's one more than me. But I knew what he was saying. He wasn't talking about chess. If you can make one sound step, all it takes is one sound step. And people frequently come to me and they say, oh, how can I do this? How can I become completely celibate? I want to make a decision to become completely celibate. Or I want to do this, or I want to do that. My answer is, try it for one day. If you can manage it for one day, then try it for one more day. Just make one sound move. Don't try to do the impossible. It's not. You can't do it that way. You've got to make one sound move at a time. And don't feel that you're not doing something. Mm-hmm. Because it looks like such a minuscule amount that you are doing. Because you're managing probably more than most people who are trying to do this whole big thing and cannot handle it.
This is why we talked about the danger of quiescence from meditation the other day. That is not that's not where it leads if it's done right. It leads to activity.
One sound move. If you make one sound move a day, you're doing darn well. I'm ready to go ahead.
I want to ask a question about death. It's still for me a problem about life after death and still haven't solved it. But the idea I got a few years ago from somebody I had some esteem for was, he said, well, compare it with a flower, for example, a rose. When the rose dies, there will be some parfum left. The parfum is similar to the rose, but you are not the rose again. You have lost your individuality.
It's interesting. Mm-hmm. It's very interesting because the word for what is left over after death is klesa in Buddhism. And klesa means the perfume. Mm-hmm. The klesa vasana, the residue, the perfumed residue, the smell of. Or the tendency for. But the actual word means perfume, which is very interesting.
We're going to go into all of that tomorrow.
Yes, that's all tomorrow's
the
stuff.
The details of that.
The relation between the word perfume and the word essence, is there any?
The essence is another matter. The essence is that which is unchangeable, undying. The perfume is that with which you perfumed the essence. Yes.
I want to continue on that. maybe there survives some perfume. But my historical individuality is, let's say, to use a German word, einmalig, is unique and never comes back.
Right.
Do you agree with that?
Right.
Yeah. I cannot imagine me living in another time. I'm...
You, as you are, won't.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Right.
You, as you are, won't.
Yeah. Yes. I'm unique, historical, and will never repeat.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yes. You, as you are, will not. I, as I am, will not. None of us, as we are, will.
But some essence will survive.
Yes. The perfume will remain. The way in which I have done it at times, we have goat monks here. And I have pointed out frequently that somebody who was goat monk 4 weeks ago still is perfumed by the goats, but is no longer a goat monk. It is very important to understand karma in that way, because that is how karma works. It's a perfume of the essence.
Thank you,
Bethos. Yes. One of the things I would like to bring up before we go, and I'm sorry to be carrying on so late, because tomorrow I want to go into the actual dying and how to help the dying and certain other aspects of it. One thing I would like to bring up is how very serious it is to go along with the executions and this sort of thing, because some poor wretch picks up a perfume from that who is completely and absolutely innocent. And we have had hundreds of cases here of people who have had past lives that have popped out almost like this within a very, very short time. They're starting to meditate. They've had these terrors coming up, absolute terror, the seeing of horrible things, instruments of torture, instruments of death, this sort of thing coming up. And they've not understood why, and they've got terrified thinking that this was the meditation. And what they have had was a previous death was such a trauma, and that they were received the perfume from that death, and sometimes the actual physical lesion from it, a hole in the... Some meditation, it can happen to any one of you. And before you get the terrors this afternoon, you should know what they're possibly about. Because that could be a very serious matter. We had here last year at the same time a young lady, a charming young nurse, who was a very ardent Christian, who was working on herself in this way, and suddenly had a very terrifying and very vivid past life come up. And for a few minutes she thought we'd drugged her food to prove a point.
It was,
and then
just
she
too,
realized
it was
so vivid and
real,
so extremely real. And then she realized we hadn't. And the difficulty was, how could she reconcile this with Christianity? And of course, up until the 3rd century, the Christians believed in past lives. It was one of the councils that decided that no, we shouldn't go into this. And then it's been suppressed ever since.
Now, most of the time, nothing like that comes up. But just in case it does for someone, we do have to mention, we haven't put anything in the tea.
you're completely all right, Nibby.
Right.
Probably nothing will.
Probably nothing will, but, you know.
But just in case it does, I don't want somebody scared out of his or her wits here this afternoon. Because if you have had something like that in the past, and you have done even 1 minute right of the meditation, it can come up like that.
That is the compassion that those things that do arise are not to be avoided. They're there for us to learn from.
And they are not to be feared. No matter what you see, know that this is only a shadow. This is not you. It is only a shadow, a ghost, as it were, a perfume of the past.
But it can explain a lot of things to you about yourself.
It's just a perfume of the past. Don't ever be afraid of it. It can do nothing to you. Observe it. Learn from it, love the poor wretch who died that way, and carry straight on as though nothing had happened. And it won't hurt you. Yeah, go ahead.
Does that clear the way then? If you have
if you bless it and love it. Yes, it's the loving and the blessing of it. You see, the problem with executions is that the person was turned away from by both God and man. And as I shall explain tomorrow morning, it is absolutely essential for a person to be loved, both by God and man, at the time of death. No one should die alone. And here's the poor wretch strapped into something or other to be killed, with witnesses watching him. Yes, this is right. All the love has gone. All the compassion has gone. And that will always leave a perfume. Will always leave a klesa.
On that person who's had it done to him?
Whoever picks it up.
Well, it's not on anyone. It's just there.
It's just there, and it gets picked up by somebody.
And yes, you do pick up on... Yes, there are memories of having done such things to others that come on.
I tell you this much, that's something
else.
And when they come up... The worst thing is if you've done that to somebody, because then, when the memory comes up, you actually feel the pain of it. A perpetrator feels the pain of it. Someone who merely picked up the klesa as the person who had it done to them will merely see it and get the dog to bless the person. But the perpetrator has to bear the pain the second time around.
Remember that we use the words, you or the second time around.
Yeah, it's not that you.
As a convenient, quick means of speaking, it's not you. Suppose you come up with a memory of having a memory of a former being, not you, having done something pretty awful. It's not you that did that thing. You are the one who, as it were big enough to take on that perfume, that karma, to try to convert it with love in this lifetime. It wasn't you that did the harmful act.
But you got stuck with it because it was done.
You're the one who's got the opportunity to correct what some other being did.
Yeah, that's compassion.
And that's also the difference between reincarnation and rebirth.
Yes.
I think that's why they say all beings must be saved.
Yes. And it is also why we shouldn't make laws that prevent beings from being saved quicker than they would be. Mm-hmm. Now, I am not saying that murderers should be let loose on society. Obviously, they shouldn't. But at least let us do something that will put them out of circulation without creating more trouble.
Don't create more problems than we've already got.
Don't stop a fire by throwing gasoline on it.
Yes.
Do you think the Christian concept of original sin is a kind of distorted interpretation of karma or a
possibly,
way of
yes.
converting that
possibly,
into
yes.
another?
Yes, we really haven't got time to go into that this time, because one of the things that worries me with these seminars, and I've got this one better than the last one, which was the first of the bunch, is the size of the subject. You always have to spend the first 2 days getting all the theory down, or you've got no frame of reference to talk to people at a later date. It's highly possible. I do know that the Christians believed 100% in past lives and had them come up. And for some reason, 300 years after the death of Christ, the bishop said no. Possibly people were coming up with... Possibly it was being misused. Perhaps some people were getting hysterical and saying, oh, I am the reincarnation of Christ, or I am the reincarnation of a disciple or something of the sort. I can tell you this much. You are not terribly likely. In fact, you're not. It's not going to happen. That you will find that you were some great saint in a past life. Because, you see, if the person did right, there's no klesa to be left
behind.
There's
no perfume.
It's only when you did wrong there's perfume to be left behind. So you are not likely to find you were Christ. You are not likely to find that you were one of the great saints. You are likely to find you were Joe Bloggs, who was an ass. Which is a very different matter. And it rather takes the... It sort of takes the, what's the word, the...
Glamour.
The glamour and the spectacularness out of it. Go ahead, friend. Yes?
This is about transplants again.
Yeah.
I carry in my wallet a little card in case I am killed to donate my organs to other people. I'm becoming concerned about that at this point, after hearing this.
Don't be. Don't be. If you are offering them with a good heart, no harm can come. It's only if you're doing it for self-aggrandizement. Always be sure of your motives. Really face them. Don't turn away from them. Look at them absolutely clearly. Do I really do this because I really want to help or because I want to feel good?
Doesn't mean that you won't necessarily feel good. But it's the reason.
You've got to really look at your motives for doing things. If the motives are good, no harm can come.
Those may change.
Yeah. Yes.
What about that old saying, the road to hell is paved with good intentions?
That's when you haven't looked at the motives hard enough.
That's when you thought it was too easy.
That's what meditation's for.
Yes. You frequently get people come to a temple and they seem to have excellent motives for doing it. And after they've meditated for 4 or 5 months, they come to you and they say, I don't know that I ought to be a monk. I don't think my motives were exactly right. Maybe they were running away from their parents or running away from a husband or running away from life or thinking that they could just sit there looking beautiful in lovely robes and all that would happen would be the angels would come around them, and they suddenly discovered that it was more like the middle of hell than the middle of heaven. Expectations, ideas, that's the sort of thing. People who have not thought it through hard enough. Fair enough? Okay, now this afternoon I'm going to get a team in here and they'll show you what to do and how to do this for various things on yourselves. We can't give you the whole book. There's only a bit of it here. This is only my sections. About that much of his that he's... I decided that it would be good if a genuine scientist worked all this stuff up, because I've got it from all the religious point of view, and he can take it from there to the scientific and not be anti the medical profession, but let's work together. After all, what we're trying to do is get people better. Not what the idiot was trying to do with me in San Francisco, which was see what caused it to get sick. I could still crown him.
That's cruel.
I could crown... I'm actually very grateful to him, because he got me going on one of the deepest sets of meditation under the sun, but I could crown him for being an ass. Because whereas it helped me, how many is it doing damage to?
Did you tell him that... Have you given the status report back?
Yes, as a matter of fact, we did. We even sent him the EKG that came afterwards, and he's still scratching his head saying, it's not possible. The EKG's normal, she's not got diabetes, and the blood pressure's great. How did that happen?
Why didn't you send him an autographed copy of your book?
Because he wouldn't read it.
Well, you never know.
But that will show you exactly how you deal with the illness in full detail, or how one person dealt with it, how I did.
Okay.
What I want to talk about, I'm going to take the second one on the board, as I want to make it very clear that although there has been much talk, especially in our culture, of original sin and punishment, death being a punishment. And somewhere in the Bible, I think it says, since by evil came birth, so by evil came death, and now we need redeeming. There is no such thing as that in Buddhism. It is a totally different attitude of mind. Just as I explained to you over the past few days, the causes of illness. If you keep on doing something, eventually you put enough tension or enough strain on something to make it sick. So eventually, if you put too much strain on something, you will make that organ or part of you so sick that it's going to kill you. Therefore, death is not a punishment, it is a consequence. And that makes it a lot saner and a lot more sensible to deal with. And it also means that death as you know it is a consequence. Because in Buddhism there is no real death. Therefore, if you have done the sort of thing we were doing yesterday, cleaned up the various organs, cleaned up this body, which we call the skandhas, cleaned everything right down till you find, know, and can feel the essence. If you've got it down to where, as you meditate on each organ, you can feel the essence thrilling through it like a fountain. If you've got it down to that stage, when death comes, the body falls away, but there is just this lovely thrilling of essence. There is no death. There is just sometimes we see a body and sometimes we don't. Sometimes we plug in a light bulb and sometimes we don't. If we do, we see the light. If we don't, then the light is out, but there is still just the same amount of electricity. If you think of the body as the light bulb and the electricity is the essence, if you plug a body in, you see a body, and if you don't plug a body in, you don't. But the essence remains the same. There is an unborn, undying, unchanging.
And the essence is not captured by the light bulb.
No, it just is used by the light bulb. It just enables it to be seen. Therefore, do not think of death as a punishment. But if you become what in Buddhism is called an undutiful being, if you don't try to do something about yourself, yes, then death will seem to be a punishment. Why do I keep being sick? What have I done that I keep being sick? Why do I have these terrible illnesses? What is the reason for this? This is so unfair. Well, it's you that makes yourself sick. And it is you that can make yourself not sick. Obviously, when you have cleaned up everything, you are still going to die in the sense in which you know the term. But you are not going to die for anywhere near the same reasons. That which brought this psychophysical being, which you call you, into existence, was a bunch of stresses and strains, a bunch of karma, that caused a critical mass to appear. The purpose of life was to make sure that that critical mass did not reappear. In other words, it was cleaning it up. And having cleaned it up, having got down to the essence, and the more you feel that essence, the cleaner it has become. The more the essence can thrill through every part of you, the less there is any chance whatsoever of your coming back again. I mean, in the sense of another psychophysical being coming back. You are unique in time, as our friend pointed out. Don't misunderstand me. The less chance of another one coming back there is, and the more chance of one of the most exquisite things happening that I know of at the time of death. Now, this flux, this thrilling thing that happens, that you can feel in life, and which you will know in death, this thrilling thing, is by no means peculiar to Buddhism. Go through any of the books, St. Teresa of Avila, St. John of the Cross, any of the really great saints, and you will hear of them talking about it. St. Teresa openly speaks of the fountain that thrills through you. And the thing feels exactly like a fountain when it goes through. The thing you need to remember is that this is not unique to saints. It is everybody's rightful inheritance. It is the right state of normality. That is what normality is. It is not going around feeling miserable and trying to do everything backwards. I've got to do this, I've got to spend money on this, I've got to do that in order to get myself merit. No, your job is to do something about you, and in doing something about you, you do something about the universe. The cleaning up of you. But it's not just the cleaning up. You see, in the beginning it is said in Buddhism, we train for self in order to cleanse ourselves. Later we train for others. But the true monk trains neither for self nor other. He trains for training's sake. In other words, when you have dealt with all your past karma, and all the karma that connects you with other people, you have, as it were, now a beautiful clean slate. Then what do? Just say, all right, now all I have to do is go off and kick the bucket, which is what the Cathar heretics did. You know, they got it right up to that point. What they didn't know was, what did you do after that? It was not, now I must starve to death, or I might do something that will make me really dreadful and then I won't get to God. Because they just negated everything that they'd done for the previous 50 or 60 years. No. You then train for training's sake. You continue doing that which is right, because that's the only way to go. And when death comes naturally, as we understand death, it is just something that slips off like all the other stuff. It is just some more of this traffic on the bridge I told you about. You are sitting down there in this beautiful stream and the whole lot passes by, and there is no terror, no punishment, no grief. It is just something that has finished and is in fact done with. As our friend said, it makes you unique in time. There is nothing to come back. But if you don't do it that way, yes, then death will be a punishment. It will be a terrifying thing. Therefore, the person who wants to help the dying has got to make it very clear that the person needs to meditate, to find out what needs to be cleaned up, and to do everything they can about that, to clean it up. Have read any part of my book, How to Grow a Lotus Blossom? I think some of you just bought it yesterday. I would point out that the most important thing at the beginning of that was to look at everything I had done and say, all right, if I've done wrong, let me know, and I'll do something about it. And it meant writing an awful lot of, not an awful lot, 4 or 5 letters to various people that I'd had scraps with, and dealing with a few stray things that should have been dealt with many years ago. Getting all of the stuff in which I had in any way quarreled or squabbled or otherwise not got along with other people dealt with first. Putting everything in order that could be put in order, no matter how minuscule it might be, in order that I might have done everything on my side to deal with what I had done. I can never wipe out an act that has been committed, but I can do something to prove that I was wrong in doing it. I may have been right at the right or wrongness of, or the, in other words, the fairness of a situation at a time is neither here nor there. If you do something that it was better you didn't do, then you're going to have to clean it up. That the other side was unreasonable and that there's reason on my side and it's not. Don't get into the fairness or unfairness. Did you do it? Yes. Admit you did it. Deal with it. If the other one doesn't admit it, that's his headache. It's not yours. Deal with your side of it. And this is how you help a dying person. Don't get into judging what he or she did. Don't let him or her get into the judging of it, or the fairness or unfairness of it. Don't worry about it. Let me write him a letter if the person can't write. Or how about you writing him a note if the person can't write? There were 2 people with whom I had had running fights since I was about 20. It is very easy for me to say that they were fights I'd inherited from my family. That's not the point. I didn't have to perpetuate them. You understand what I'm saying? I did the perpetuating. That my family had the fights is not my problem. Therefore, it is my fault just as much as it is theirs. Now, when you write such a letter, you have got to be very careful what you say. You cannot write something that is going to get the thing going again. And what I did on both these occasions was just to simply say, exactly how did I put this? There never was a real quarrel between us. If either of us perpetuates one, we are both wrong. We both know this letter does not need to be sent, but I am sending it anyway. I got two very interesting letters back. Neither of them mentioned a word on what I'd said. They were just telling me all the things they were doing now. Which is fine. It produced the right effect. We did not make more karma. Do you understand what I'm saying? If you are assisting the dying, do not let him or her make more. They've made enough. You do not need to give them any more to make. But if they're trying to clean the thing up, let them do it. Right, that is one thing. Offer to write letters to anyone they need to make the peace with. Know how to do it so that it will not make more karma, either for them or for you. Do not judge the situation. Because if you judge it, then you've just landed yourself a bunch of karma. And remember that although you may be assisting at a death, someone is going to probably assist at yours. It's a very sobering thought that you are not God. If you judge at the time of death, somebody is going to judge at your time of death. This again brings up the things that we were talking about yesterday of judging people at the time by execution. Do not judge others at time of death. And do not create more karma. Sometimes the people will be dead. Sometimes it is not possible to put things straight. Then, I don't know why, but there is something that always seems to make it sufficient just to want to put it right. It's almost as though whatever this exquisite essence is, it understands and doesn't try to force you to do the impossible. If you can do it, you should do it, and it will require it. If you can't, if the person is dead, just a sincere desire to do this will work. Which is a very beautiful fact. I strongly recommend anyone who is interested in this essence, in this flow, to go through certain parts of St. Teresa of Avila, who talks about it much more honestly and much more openly, although she's obviously scared stiff of the Inquisition and is sort of saying, but you know this, you great monk, each time she's writing to him. She's teaching the great monk, but the great monk, she's sort of deferring to him all the time just to keep her head on her shoulders. I don't blame her for that one. But you should read that. It is very, very interesting. And she is actually talking pure Buddhism. And it is interesting that that is a doctor of the Christian Church. This is one of the things that I and the monks of St. Bernard's Abbey have found so absolutely fascinating. If you stop arguing about the small things, did God create the world in 6 days or didn't he, and who the heck knows and who the heck cares, if you stop arguing about that and the other smaller things and really get down to the nitty-gritty of it, you find that we're doing exactly the same thing. Now, this does not mean that we should make one religion and discard all the others. There's no way one could, and it would be most unwise. People have the right to think what they think, but they don't have the right to say that this is all there is to religion. Because if you do that, then you leave out of count everything where we can meet together and find that we do all land up in the same place. I wrote an article recently saying that when the monk climbs Mount Sumeru, it is delightful to discover the monk of Mount Carmel coming up the other side and the monk of Mount Sinai just peering over the edge. It's all the same mountain. We're just calling it by different names and we're all landing in the same place. But we've all got there by different reasonings. And it is quite right and quite reasonable that we should get there by different reasonings. And quite right and quite reasoning that we should call God or the cosmic Buddha, or Yahweh, by different terms. Or even by XYZ, if that happens to be how we think about it. How would an intelligent amoeba think of God? But he knows it. So, giving assistance at death. Don't lay your trip on somebody else. One of the things that I was taught as a Zen master was, when helping at a death, The only thing that is of real value is a very large, very sympathetic ear. You do not use your tongue at all, except to ask how you can help the person concerned. And if he does not know how he needs to be helped, to ask if there is anyone he can write letters to, anyone he can ring up, anything he can do, anything that was stolen that can be returned, and do it in a very gentle, very, very kind, very compassionate way, so that the person does not feel terrible shame if he's walked off with something, does not feel that he is being judged terribly if he has done some terrible crime. It's too late then anyway. Just deal with the thing and let it happen. And let the person go quietly. Your job is not to judge. He carries his karma. You do not carry his karma. Do not make karma for yourself by trying to carry his, or by trying to enforce his karma. Because if you try to enforce his karma, all you do is try to become God. And you are not God. Anytime you judge another person, you try to become God. And it is important to remember that. I'm going to
question.
Yeah. I have a more general question about... It's been bothering a long time. Maybe I've heard about theories in physical and astronomical science that the universe is dying, maybe collapsing in black hole. It seems for me a very gloomy thought, but anyway, has Buddhism some ideas about it, or has he thought about it?
If black holes come, they come. The cosmic Buddha goes on eternally. There will still be this lovely flow. Maybe it'll be in a black hole, maybe it'll be out of one. Who knows and who cares? Just find the flow. Don't worry about black holes. That's my only answer to that, and it's the only answer I'd ever get. You might like to say something on that.
Well, there was a... in the time of the Buddha, a number of people asked, they didn't know about black holes, but they asked similar cosmological kinds of questions. And his answer was always pretty much the same, and I think it was probably a pretty good one, which was to say, look, I don't know. I don't know about black holes. I don't know how the universe started. I don't know how it's going to end. I do know what you can do to live a good life and die a good death. Now, if you want to do that, fine. But I do know also that spending a lot of time thinking about cosmological questions does not tend to living a full life and dying a full death. It tends to distract from that process.